Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m., and that's when we're on the radio broadcast, streaming live at those times. We also have the podcasts located in very strategic places, easy for you to find. How about so easy that all you have to do is go to the homepage of richarddugan.com and boom, there are the podcasts via SoundCloud. Also on the radio shows page of richarddugan.com, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, iTunes. We're expanding that, but in the meantime, you've got lots of different locations to go to listen to these interviews. And then when you are listening to the podcasts at these various locations, if you click on that little grocery cart up in the upper right-hand corner as you're listening to the interview, that'll take you to our guest website. We want you to go there. We want you to learn more about our guests and about the work that they are doing so that you can continue your evolutionary process of growth and becoming more of the person that you would like to be. We are excited today to talk with our guest who is going to, I think, continue to reinforce the concept that, which is more than a concept, the reality that we need to be learning from nature. But she has a very specific focus, fine-tuned, if you will. And she's also written a wonderful little book that I encourage you to get a copy of. Her name is Helen Brennand, and she is the author of Belief. And the website, if you are interested in pursuing that as we are conversing, why not? Go to Belief 444. That's Belief and the number 444.com. Helen, I want to thank you so much for joining us here on the program. It's great to have you with us, and I'm really very excited about our conversation today.
Oh, thank you for inviting me on, Richard. It's great to talk.
And you're coming to us all the way from the UK, so
yeah.
So it's, I don't know if it's 10 or 12 hours or how many hours difference, but nonetheless, we're here to share your insights and your experiences as you have grown through this wonderful process. Obviously the book Belief is a part of that, but we are talking about the influence, the participation by, I'll call it the equine community,
yeah.
as it were. tell me first of all, what role are the horses in your life playing in the work that you are doing?
Well, they're now, I would say, my teachers. I always had a passion for horses and animals and nature. And, you know, I did sort of the regular things people do with horses. And then I learned to sort of many techniques, and then I became an instructor and a coach. But then when I sort of and always loved them deeply, and I've always had rescues in, and we've always tried to help animals that are in need. But when I had this it was a very deep and profound experience with them, that role changed, where I was, I suppose, the one that was caring and feeling like I was helping them. It reversed very quickly, and they became the teachers. And as I observed what they were trying to show me, and I became more and more aware, that is how I have left it, really. And each day I'm open to their teachings. Sort of my main focus in my work life with them now is creating the best environment I can so that they can be as near to nature and the natural instincts and all the needs are fulfilled, to make them feel that they can share comfortably with me, you know, it is stress-free. A lot of our play, you know, the way we keep our animals is quite stressful, particularly horses, when we think that, you know, in the wild they'd be moving, you know, for about 17 hours a day, you know, and they can be stuck in the stables for that amount of time. So that, but also when I work with them now, it's very much I observe them in these sort of sessions that we do with people, therapy sessions, where they are the mirror to the, you know, the person that comes, and I facilitate what they are communicating if need be, because sometimes that experience is unspoken with the person, and the person starts to become more self-aware as the animal is tuning into that, the person's breathing, their muscle tension, emotions. And it's quite an overwhelming feeling when you first experience that, you know, becoming really aware of yourself and then becoming aware of this, you know, majestic, beautiful, powerful animal that is there trying its hardest to help you recognize things about yourself that, you know, maybe are stopping your growth or, you know, stopping you fulfilling your potential. So really, I am their student, I think, Richard. I think that the horses are will forever be my teachers now.
I find it interesting that you, actually, I should rephrase this, you didn't choose the horses, they chose you.
Yeah.
As is usually the case with animals in our lives, we think, as such self-absorbed
we're
beings,
them.
Yeah, that we're saving them, that we're choosing them, but the reality is they're choosing us. And of course, there is always the sad heartbreak of losing a one that you become very close to. We had an example of that happen. We found a puppy in a store. They were selling these puppies, and this was back in Phoenix in 2006, right before we moved. And my wife fell in love with this beautiful shepherd chow mix with that wonderful curly tail. And I said, and they told us how much it was. And I says, no, that's a little too much. Plus the fact we're moving, because we knew we were moving. And I said, that's not fair to the dog, you know, to bring them into the home that they're not going to be staying in. And so we went away. And of course, we were there again the next week. We were passing by. She says, pull in there. Well, I want to go in. And guess what? That dog was still there.
Yeah. Waiting.
And what was I going to, I couldn't say anything. I mean, it's like, okay. Here's my card. Yes, we'll take the dog. And his name became Connor. Oh. Well, he came with us to Santa Barbara, and about six, almost 7 years ago, ironically, on the anniversary of my entering broadcasting, August 29th, that date, that is, he died due to a snake bite. And of course, it was obviously very heartbreaking, but we got to talking with someone who is very intuitive, and they said that basically he had finished the work that he came to do.
Yeah.
His work was complete. Yeah. And it's like, but he wasn't that old, you know, that, you know, the whole thing, like, no, bring him back. But that's kind of what happens in our lives. And I'm sure that you've experienced that, with the animals, the horses in this case, that are in your life at some level.
Mm-hmm.
But this particular book on belief, when you put this together, and I guess originally what it was described sort of as a stream of consciousness type of writing.
Yeah.
Give us the general premise. I mean, obviously the title belief, we're all dealing with our beliefs. We're all trying to move beyond some of them that sort of keep us stuck. So talk to us a little bit about that. We'll get into the influence by the horses as well. But tell us about this concept of belief.
Yeah, well, I think when I had the experience, it was, as like I described to many, it was very powerful and instantaneous. And the labels that I carried with me at that time. So labels of like mother, wife, you know, job titles, all those kind of things. Just went. I was in this place where I was completely limitless. There was a real experience of freedom. And what became apparent very quickly was all the beliefs that I had up until that point were challenged, but not in an aggressive way. It was a very non-force way, but it was as if they showed up to me one by one. And I could recognize that they weren't truths, really. I wasn't living the life I could live because these beliefs that, you know, the shoulds and the coulds and the things that everybody, you know, I think we all, they get layered upon us as we grow up and we watch, you know, sort of the media and things that go on out there. And it was an instantaneous change of all these beliefs and these truths of how I could live life, and the potential that was there to live life opened up instantaneously. And I did grab that because the freedom that I felt when these old belief systems had been sort of challenged and dropped away, also with the labels that I carried and, you know, we all carry, I knew that life was going to be very different. So I think the belief then in this unconditional love, because that's the only way I can describe what I felt. It was a love beyond any kind of human kind of love that I've ever experienced. I realized that this was a power that was in all of us, and this was my new belief. And this I recognized it in every time the horses caught my eye, one by one, as each animal caught my eye. I realized that this was going to be a new path. It was going to open up the doors to the rest of my life. And I knew it wasn't going to be the same, because all the initial goals that I was, you know, that, you know, I think we all, you know, have plans and ideas and we want to fulfill certain things, all those diminished, and this desire to serve this greater purpose, which was really about connecting back to this love and sharing that, became the focus. So that's sort of how it was coming about as I was writing. I mean, I didn't plan to write it. That sort of came along with the journey. And like I say to my friends now, even, you know, though I wasn't that confident about sharing the writing initially, within it, when I read it back, it brings me back to that moment, and there are other truths revealed in it. And for me, it's, again, you know, it just keeps help reiterating, you know, to keep coming back to that place when the material world and the outside world, you know, tries to pull you off it, the distractions. Mm-hmm. And in that place of understanding, when, you know, I'd stepped into it, and it sounds strange, really, because it's very real. I wasn't in any kind of altered state. I was in a very grounded state at the time, actually. I could feel from the animals this great excitement of what is happening upon Earth. Although there's this, obviously, and we see it in the media, you know, the dreadful things that are happening out there and the dreadful things that we see happening to animals and, you know, people. But there, we were heading towards this great awakening, and, you know, the world will change. So there was this great feeling of being inspired, you know, taking those risks to change life now and embrace it and make the most of it and keep sharing this experience that I'd had, you know, to try and encourage anyone who maybe felt any of these sort of, you know, they can be quite slight feelings of excitement, to keep following those, because, you know, it will lead us to a wonderful place in the end, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Although there's challenges that we hit on the way. So that's really, it's a strange one, really, the book, because it just jumped from one experience to the other. You know, they were just like this array of experiences and understandings and I would say excitement for this shift that we're going through. Although sometimes it doesn't feel that exciting, does it, when you like we see what's going on out in the world. It can look quite frightening, I suppose.
It is hard sometimes to look outside of oneself, yeah, and see all the supposed chaos and so forth.
Yeah.
But I've been starting to put it into a different context, and maybe this is where your work has taken you as well, in one sense.
Yeah.
And that is that the reality is that there is no chaos. And I put it this way. If you take a look at the macro world, you look at the cosmos, all right? Mm-hmm. You're going to really broaden your perspective on this one. And you start taking a look at the way the cosmos moves. Yes, you've got your spinning galaxies and all this. And you also have these other things that are hurtling through space. And sometimes they collide. Sometimes they crash one into another, into a planet, dot, dot, dot. Well, the universe is just being the universe. Now, we would certainly judge something like that, especially if it impacted the Earth, as bad.
Yeah.
But from the cosmic perspective, the macro perspective, that's neither good nor bad. That's just what is.
Yeah.
So when we start to make that shift, and of course, I know this goes contrary to a lot of other people's beliefs about good and evil and so forth. Mm-hmm. But if you when you start thinking about it, you can't actually think about it until after the sequence is complete. When you look at it in the aftermath, you're going, wow, well, look the things that I learned and look where I am now and the growth that I've experienced. But as you're going through it, the judgment from the human ego perspective is, oh, gosh, this is terrible. This is bad. This is I've got to get out of this kind of thing. And when I again, I can bring it back down a little closer to home when we look at the natural world. I mean, you're dealing with horses in particular. Mm-hmm. And sometimes things happen to these horses just in their day-to-day lives that just is there's no judgment from their standpoint on it. It just is. And so, for example, the experiences that you went through, certainly again, from one perspective, pretty horrific, pretty bad, bad stuff. But then again, then it brought you to this new place where, wow, you're thriving.
Yeah.
So was that really that bad? It was a path that you had to go through to get here.
Yeah, that's it. And I think one of the things that sort of really resonated with me there that you just mentioned was the judgment, because one of the things I did learn and I learned very quickly was the horses don't judge, and they taught me not to make those judgments of good and bad on anything that came into my life. And one of the horses that was very connected and I did a lot of work with before this, so we had a real great bond and we really trusted each other, was I remember hearing the words internally, don't get excited either way. Watch me and stay in the center.
Mm-hmm.
And I did. I began to watch her and I thought, no, nothing excites her one way or the other. She always stays grounded. If she has to respond, she'll respond, but then again straight back to that central point. And and again, I think as well with the life and death thing, Richard, I have really grown in my understanding and honoring of life and death with the horses, because I used to really struggle to deal with the loss until this, we had a little pony, and I would carry a lot of burden after they died, because I used to, you know, blame myself, and there'd be that judgment again that I could have done this or that. Or, but what I realized as I was getting this connection was becoming deeper, was they do know, you know, circumstances are happening because they do know that they are ready to leave, or that the work's done. And I remember this, she was a beautiful, and she was a rescue. She came from a rescue center that we support. And she said, I've got two, she said something like, you know, let me go. I've got 2 weeks in, it was something like time, space. It was as if she had this 2 weeks period of where she was preparing for that passing over. And we did honour that. I mean, she was ready to go physically, you know, things had started to change internally. But it was the first time I think I'd helped her, you know, an animal pass over, and it be more of an upliftment and an acceptance. Like you say, it was just what it was, and it was actually perfect and beautiful. And she had responsibility for that, and I just helped her. So it was a very different understanding of life and death, and the death was has become very different. I know they're just moving into the next phase of their lives, and we do have to let go. So I'm a little bit better at allowing and letting go. As much as I love them, you can imagine,
oh, yeah,
like you with your dog, and you love, you know, the relationship is, the relationships with them are beautiful, aren't they? So
they are indeed.
Yeah.
Helen Brennan is my guest. She has a book out called Belief, and we're talking about that and her relationship with horses in the UK, and the work that she is doing with them and through them. I am really interested in one thing here before we take our first break here. The website is belief444.com. What's the 444?
Well, when this experience was happening, I just used to see 444 all the time. And I had a friend that said to me one day, oh, gosh, that's the angels. They're looking out for you. And I think that resonated with me at the time. It was, I know it's something to attach to. And one of the things I've been taught very, you know, very much by the horses is not to become attached to things. But it was quite soothing at the time when I was grieving, when I'd lost the child, and I was going through this sort of period of loss, although it was a beautiful time in the sense of the awakening and the opening with the horses. So the 444 came as my thank you back for that number always popping up just when I needed maybe a little bit of extra support, or to know that I was being, you know, looked out for, and I was going down the right path. You know, I was right to follow this new journey that I'd started upon.
Well, I know that we can all use a little help every now and then. And if you've been told that that number refers to the angels,
yeah,
hey, you know, use that at every turn. The book is Belief 444, and those are the numbers, 444.com. We'll be linked to her website as well. We want you to stay with us here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, because we're heading into, well, it's not exactly the home stretch. We've got a couple of furlongs to go. Stay tuned.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand.
And welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, and we're not really running a race per se. What we are doing is we are a nice little trot here, maybe every once in a while a gallop and what have you, and dealing with the absolutely incredible work that Helen Brennan is doing. And she has a wonderful young lady who has illustrated this book, Belief. her daughter, Emma Sykes, and really, really very, very nice. Not a lot of illustrations in here, but the ones that are here are just, they're very, very nice. I like the, especially the ones of the horses. And I have to tell you that when the Kentucky Derby rolls around, more so than, say, the Preakness or the Belmont, but still, even then, I neither have a horse in the race, okay, nor am I really, do I really care who wins per se. I just love watching them run.
Yeah.
They are just so beautiful. I have, my wife and I have a dog by the name of Angus. He is almost the size of a horse, 125-pound, big black King Shepherd. And I love watching that dog run, too, when he's in a full gallop. It's, I don't know what it is about them running and just watching the legs and the muscles and all of this. And with the horses, the wind going through their mane and what have you, it's, there's just something so majestic and powerful, and yet at the same time, just so fluid and beautiful. Can you talk to us about your experiences in terms of this? I'm assuming it's referred to as a herd of horses.
Yes, yeah, the herd. Yeah,
because I know that, for example, with crows, it's called a murder. I don't know why, but it is. But tell us about your experiences, especially maybe just being in silence with them, and what you pick up on.
Yeah, well, I mean, the herd is home for me now. It became home in a different way, you know, from around 2012. It was the most beautiful experience being invited into that, and to watch the horse move, like you say, in a gallop, and to watch that freedom and elegance, just that in itself is awe-inspiring. I experienced, obviously our horse are domesticated horses, so it was a period of time as we you know, sort of introduced the horses into this herd environment where they were living together, but when I was invited in, and it is different for everyone. I think they understand that we've all got different needs and different areas of our lives to work on, but it was silence. They brought me into silence. It was so profound to be able to listen, and I realized just how they were communicating with each other in this it was a phenomenal place. And the strange thing was, I'd walked through this you know, into this environment, I don't, gosh, there must be millions of times during my life, but this one time I stepped in to that, it was so serene. And in that place, I recognised that the body language was delivering a lot more than I'd ever realised. And the subtle movements, the shifts and changes in energy, I could feel and I could witness the communication that was going on within the herd, how they were caring for each other, how aware they were of the slightest change in the environment around them, and how they were responding to that. And what I realized initially was that I was way off track in life, because I couldn't hear anything that was going on in me. So I was certainly wasn't aware of any of the environment around me. I was wrapped up in the day-to-day, busy, you know, trying to get thousands of things done. And in this space of stillness and silence, new perspectives arose, and I started to see life very differently. But what I realized was they were trying to show me how to live life. And I realized it's not different, really, you know, between the species. They they are social animals. They enjoy, they thrive on, those connections between each other. They look after each other. They had a great system to keep sort of order, if that makes sense. But in a non-force way, nothing was forced. It was very definite. There's no hanging on to stories that are going over and over in the mind. Once something was dealt with, it was dealt with and they moved on and back into that sort of central place of stillness. But I realized that in the moment, in that present moment that they were able to draw me back into, was this phenomenal potential. And it was this unconditional offering. And they gave and gave and gave to me from this place, but never, ever asked for anything back. They never, they were just giving and giving and giving. And, for me, obviously, it was a very emotional experience, because to be given in such a pure way, you know, the keys to your life, you know, to open that door and be able to step in and own it. They give me, the keys to freedom. And so I knew the rest of my life was going to be dedicated back to them and whatever they wanted to do with this amazing wisdom that they held. So that was the start of what I was learning. And then it went on. It went on from day to day to day, and still to this day, I learn something new every time I step out into the environment with them. And going back to what you said before the break about the horse, you know, sometimes when they're ill or there's a problem, it just is. And yesterday we had a horse, and she had a colic, and we had a crazy busy day, lots happening. And I went into the field, and she's looking out for me because she know there's certain things that I do to sort of help her cope with it if there's some pain risen or and she was laid down, and I got down with her in the field, and I'm doing what I can do to support her. And she brought her head up and looked me right in the eye, and I'm thinking, right, I'll have to cancel. I had an interview last night, she just looked me right in the eye and said, no. She said, we've got work to do. And what I recognized was, even though she was having the colic and there was all this going on, she was bringing me back into the present moment. She knew in that situation I would be there to deliver what I could to help her, but it would make me very present, and we would get on with the job that's in hand, which for her with me is, you know, sharing this wisdom and not being frightened to speak about it. Day in, day out, Richard, I feel there's just wonders. I could talk all night telling you the things I've learned.
Well, I was actually going to ask you in regards to the things that you've learned. And obviously we will have to have you back to get more of this information. But can you dig deep into that reservoir? Mm-hmm. And what has been the most profound? What's the one experience you've had that stands out? And I know that's hard to do because I can hear the passion in your voice just as you talk in this context. That it would be very difficult. It's just kind of like, so who's your favorite child? Or in your case, who's your favorite horse? Is there one in particular or one of many that you can share with us that's really made the biggest difference in your life?
Well, I think the biggest, one of the biggest changes was the realization that fear, the fears that I had rolling inside of me that stopped me moving out of my comfort zone, I had this huge realization that it's all manufactured, and then we attract more situations that sort of feed that fear. And I realized the power of this unconditional connection that I'd found just would diminish that fear. So I think the realization that fear, and it might sound strange when I say is manufactured, is that, you know, from the beliefs that we have, that fear, when I really went into it and looked at it, it wasn't real and it wasn't a truth. And I could move beyond these fears. And that was a big one, because that started to allow me to step out of my comfort zone and to do what was true to me, which wasn't accepted, you know, in the mainstream and maybe by everyone else at the time. But for me to be really happy and joyful in life, I had to embrace this part of who I was, and this connection I had with animals and this sensitivity, which had been ridiculed most probably when I was younger, was actually the most powerful thing, not in the sense of power over anything, but most beautifully powerful energy that can change our world and change our relationships for, you know, for the better. So I started to embrace it. So that was the biggest, I would say the biggest on a sort of a life-changing scale, because I moved out of the comfort zones and started to speak. So even today, coming on the show, I'm moving out the comfort zones, Richard, braving it.
Well, it's the thing is that we all have these incredible experiences with animals. Mm-hmm. That I mean, I back in October of 2018, I had to let my beautiful white shepherd Makushla go, and we had taken care of her for 14 months. Mm-hmm. After she had been the most incredible caregiver most all of her life, with not only an elderly husky that was part of a pack of four, and when he lost his three pack members, his mother, father, and sister, I've never seen an animal mourn before, and this was just unbelievable. Yes. And mm-hmm. we came across Makushla across the street. She was being cared for by a woman who worked at the Arizona Humane Society when we lived in Phoenix. We brought the two of them together in the middle of the street. They got on famously, so we took her. And then we moved to Santa Barbara, where she also was a partner with Connor, the Chow Shepherd Chow mix.
Yeah.
And so they were partners and so forth. And then she was alone for 6 months, which I wanted. I wanted her to have some time for herself to be solo. And then we found Connor. He came into our lives. He was 8 weeks old when he came into our lives, believe it or not, on Valentine's Day of 2013. And she raised him from that point forward. And I'd contacted several people who are intuitive with animals. And first of all, Makushla had said, basically, hey, you know, you need to take the big step. You know, I didn't want this to happen, and I feel bad because I feel like I'm disappointing you, of course. But this is where we are, and I hope that you can take that big leap. And then, of course, Angus, he's the one who says, yeah, I knew this was coming, and, you know, and so on and so forth. And on the day that she departed, I received an email from the same woman about a day later saying that her final thoughts were, thank you. Oh, I feel so good to be free of that body. Oh. And, of course, now Angus is king in the home, and he's loving it. He just absolutely is loving it. And, and what I found so interesting, as much as I loved her, and yes, there were a few tears, and maybe it's because we had to care for her for 14 months. Yeah. We knew this day was coming. As a matter of fact, I had wanted to let her go in November of the previous year. But my wife wasn't there yet. And so I waited. I waited until she, not Makushla, but my wife, and I were on the same page where she said, yeah, I think it's time. Mm. And she's ready. She's, and I knew she had been ready. So, you know, we let her go on the 12th of October, at 3:04 PM. She departed. I will tell you that one of the most incredible experiences in that was when we drove home that day to let her go, and we were waiting for the vet to arrive.
Yeah.
A hawk was flying over the house and squawking, if you will.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we just looked up at that and looked at each other going, yeah, that's the sign.
Yeah.
You know, she's ready to fly, as it were.
Yeah.
The aspect of connecting with the natural world, I'd like for you to share with us, with our listeners, your perspectives on how important that is in, as you described earlier, centering ourselves.
Yeah, I think when we center and we come into that, you know, I think that narrow path in the center of what we, so we move out of that place of judgment, we see, certainly for me, what opened up was a very large screen of wisdom and knowledge within our, within the natural world and within the animal kingdom. It didn't just stop here, you know, in the environment I was living in. It began to communicate with me everywhere I went. And I think, you know, if we can get to that place when we are, when we look out into nature, we would live very different lives. Not only would it, for the betterment of Earth and the creatures on it, but for ourselves. We've become so removed from our own natural instincts. And for me, really opening our eyes and observing. For me, observing became, it was the sitting in that central place of silence, sitting in the moment, and then watching and observing. And the mind initially, you know, just is looking through the two eyes that were given. And, you know, yeah, that has one perspective. It sees one layer. But if we can stay with it and stay focused and grounded with the natural world and the animals upon it, a very, very different screen is opened up to us. And it's mutual. And we feel this bond and this connection and this respect for all life, and for me it was an honoring of it and an awakening to it and a realization that you know, our purpose is to enjoy life but keep it in balance with everything else that is around us and gives to us. You know, Earth gives to us, it feeds us, and never does she, you know, she's constantly offering. And for me, that is the same with the animal kingdom. So I think it's a really quick way back to your true nature if you can spend time with it, but observe, and it's being present and allowing that awareness to develop. And I mean, it might, some people, it can happen quite quickly too. Or, you know, in other cases, it just takes a little bit of time, but it's well worth it because it will change your whole life, I believe.
Yeah, I can certainly understand that. Certainly, we've had a myriad of animals over the years.
Yeah.
We currently have one dog and five cats.
Oh,
and
lovely.
Five chickens.
Oh.
And at one time we had a blue tongue skank, which I call a snake with legs. And he actually does have a blue tongue.
Oh,
as a matter of fact, Connor had a blue tongue, or it was sort of shaded, you know.
Right.
Which I thought was real interesting. We've had a tortoise.
Oh, that's lovely.
We've had fish. Extraordinary experiences with fish.
Wow.
Matter of fact, my wife and I happen to be both Reiki masters, and We loved getting these. We'd have a fish, and we'd put it in the bowl and so forth, and do everything we can. We had one that got sick, and we, you know, it's like, oh my gosh!
Yeah.
And so we thought, well, what the heck? We just became Reiki masters. Let's give the fish some Reiki.
Yeah.
Now he was actually he wasn't laying on his side at the top of the water. He was actually in the water, swimming around, kind of tilted. You know, he wasn't straight up and down vertical. He was kind of diagonal, right? But he was still moving around. And we gave him Reiki, and he lived for another, I think, another couple of months.
Wow.
Which, you know.
Reiki. Yeah, which, it's amazing Reiki, isn't it? It's amazing. you know, it's was a lady came to give some Reiki to a horse. We had, she had a problem with an abscess in her foot, the mare, and with the vet had been coming out for weeks, and you know we were really struggling, and this lady came and she did a Reiki, and this abscess just burst and it just cleared within. It was hours after she left, and I thought, I've got to, I need to understand this technique and I need to learn it, and it is a beautifully powerful healing method, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it is. And the one thing that I learned from it, and this kind of goes to what you were talking about in terms of, for example, being centered.
Yeah.
Yeah, we didn't want the fish to die. But at the same time, what we learned in our training was that the energy was not there for us to direct and guide and say, okay, do this.
Yeah.
The energy, we were to guide, direct the energy toward that entity or situation, and then the entity or situation would use it as it chose.
Yeah. Well, that's really interesting as well, because I sent Reiki to, it was a lady asked me to send it to a dog that was suffering, and I remember it stopped. The dog obviously was ready to pass over, and I can remember the physical block on that energy, and you know, it is having that respect, isn't it, when you know, they don't want to accept it. It's equal, isn't it? Whether they choose to take it or not. Yeah.
Well, and I've shared this particular story with our listeners before, and that has to do with the fact that as we were, you know, practicing and doing our work, my father's brother, who had been diagnosed with cancer, and he was terminal. And so we thought, well, we're gonna send him some energy.
Yeah.
But again, we also knew that we were sending it to him to do with as he wished.
Mm-hmm.
So my parents gave us a photograph. We went home. We sent an absentee healing. And then a few weeks later, prior to his passing, a story was told to us of an experience shortly after we had sent the healing, where he had gotten really angry and threw his medication across the room. Got into his wheelchair, wheeled across the compound where he lived with his family into the home where his son lived. And they had a beautiful time of, I guess, father-son enclosure and what have you.
Yeah.
And then a day or two later, he passed. And we thought, wow, okay.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we didn't send it to heal him of the cancer. We sent it to him to do with it what he wanted to do, and he could have used it maybe to heal himself, to cure himself of the cancer, but in this case, he was ready to depart.
Ready.
And
yeah,
I think that's one of the things that we have a problem with, and I know you're familiar with this aspect, in that we seem to be, when it comes to the transition phase of life, we seem to be kinder to animals than we are to humans.
People.
Yeah.
Yeah. I see that. It's tough, isn't it? You know, I think we see family members really suffer. And you know, we just hold on and hold on and hold on to them. And I think, like we spoke about earlier, about your wife and your dog and the animals, I do notice will wait until they, you know, owners are ready, and I've seen animals that are suffering quite badly, and they are hanging on until that person is ready. And, you know, they are quite phenomenal how they will wait for that process to have sort of been fulfilled and then they go. But with people, yeah, we just seem to hang on and hang on and hang on, don't we? We're not great at letting go.
No. And I have to say that it's not that I don't become attached to the people around me, because I'm no different than anybody else, and I do.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I always seem to keep in mind is that, and I don't know if it's strange for a kid, you know, who is in his 20s or 30s, now I'm in my late 50s, to have the perspective that knowing that this is all temporary.
Yeah.
And I've been saying probably for the last 5 or 6 or 7 years that, you know, if today is my day, I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm ready. I don't have a problem with that. And I do understand that there are going to be people here that are going to be upset and they're going to be sad, and some will be glad. I don't know. Maybe they will, you know, but doesn't matter. The reality is that as it was shared with me when I was working for the Christian radio station, my relationship with God is a personal relationship. Well, my relationship, shall we say, with my life and my death is just that. It's personal.
Yeah.
And in spite of the fact that we hear the stories of loved ones being around the one who's transitioning, the one who's transitioning is still doing it alone.
Yeah.
They're the only one going through that doorway, if you will.
Yeah, yeah.
Animals seem to, they not only know when it's time, the elderly Siberian Husky that we brought with us to Santa Barbara got an extra year of life because I think we took him out of the heat, but he kept trying to escape from whatever enclosure that I would design.
Yeah.
And I kept telling him, will you stop that? Cut that out. And then I got to thinking, no, keep doing that because you'll keep showing me the weak spots and I'll keep reinforcing it to keep you safe. But what he was doing was what is in nature. He was trying to get away to die.
Yeah.
He knew it was his time.
Yeah, they're amazing, aren't they? They know, and there's an acceptance. There's this sort of biological understanding, and they're not frightened of it, aren't we? And again, it's another thing I think we can learn from them, that there is nothing to fear with death. It is just that progression, and when that time comes, we need the freedom to, you know, like he was trying to get out of the enclosure to have that space to allow, you know, that letting go of the body. And they're just so wise, aren't they? And I think when we observe these, you know, behaviours that sometimes we see as, you know, like we're trying to protect them, aren't we? We do certain things to think, oh, well, this is better if they're in this situation, this is safer, this is. But if we actually watch them, they have such a knowing and, I think respecting that is makes it easier for them to do. I'm certainly, we have rescue check-ins here, and you know, when they're coming to the end of their lives, they've not had great lives because they've been in, you know, we take them from, you know, they come out of battery farms, so they're not in the best of health. But we do the best we can for them. But when they come to the end, they always want to die at home, you know, and it's not always the easiest death when we watch them slowing down. You know, we can see that the things are starting to change, but we do now honour that and watch and observe and listen to how they want that part of their existence to come to an end. So it's wonderful that we are listening, Richard, to them. I'm sure they're very grateful.
Well, I have to say that part of me felt bad every month that went by during that 14-month period. I'm going, I can't believe that she's still going. And of course, my wife kept saying, no, she still has so much life and love in her.
Yeah.
You know, we can't. Yeah. And again, we did get to that one space last October, and we said, okay, and it's time. And so we did that.
Yeah.
But I think that one of the most incredible aspects is that the way that they choose us.
Oh, yeah.
That I find so fascinating. Talk to me about maybe an experience you had where you weren't looking, mm-hmm. but all of a sudden, boom, there it was.
I have so many of these stories, Richard. we have rescue dogs, and the scenarios that occur and these dogs turn up is quite phenomenal. But one with one of the horses was really interesting because I wasn't looking for a horse, and I ended up seeing this horse. And she's only very young, and obviously I didn't, you know, I wasn't thinking, oh, we need a horse, or we wanted another horse. And then I was away, and there was all sorts of things happening, and she just kept coming back in dreams, and it kept coming back in my thoughts. And it wasn't like this mare needed, you know, she wasn't in a bad place or anything, so it wasn't like I was thinking, oh gosh, you know, maybe we could, you know, give her a home and protect her from whatever may be going on. And then I remember thinking, oh gosh, I'll go and see her when I get back. But she'll be gone, you know, most probably, like you with your little puppy dog. I did. I went back to see her, and she was there. And just something in my heart said, you know, bring her home. And we did. And it's her, really. We have such a phenomenal bond. And I always call her, when we're working in a therapy session, I class her as unconditional love. And she'll always move into someone's space when they are ready to accept that that kind of love. And she's so bright. She's very confident, and she will show me every single day what is going on inside of me. And I laugh now because I look up and I look at her, and I know exactly what I've got to do, because she will be the perfect mirror for me. So although you know, I didn't need a horse as such at the time, she obviously knew that she was going to be my teacher. And she was going to get me on track. And she most probably knew that I would fulfill her need to share with the world what she has got to offer the world. She has done. And like I say, we've got cats and dogs and chickens, and they find us. I don't think we've got one that hasn't done something quite dramatic to get our attention and move in with us, Richard.
I just touched upon something too that I didn't even think about. And again, I don't believe in coincidences. I do believe in coincidences.
Yes.
Over the years that we've lived here in Santa Barbara, we had a flock of chickens, a rather large one, 20 to 30, maybe closer to 40, that I built a huge covered run for them and everything, and they had their wonderful coop. They had about 1,200 square feet of a run space. And now we have only five. Mm-hmm. With the dogs, of course, with my dog, Makushla, she became lame and wasn't able to walk. Her hind legs just kind of gave out.
Well,
and I've had problems with my knees and my ankles and so forth due to I don't know what, but it's gotten a ton better. I mean, I'm running around now doing stuff I wasn't doing a year or two ago. And I've noticed, too, that we had one chicken in our first big flock, and then we have one of them in our current flock of five who is also lame. has, you know, can walk, hops around on the one leg.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know what the problem is with the other leg, but it's like, how interesting. We actually pondered about that when she came up lame a little bit, and I thought, wow, this is very, very interesting, the synchronicity in that regard. I mean, you know, it's like, well, why, you know, why does this chicken have to be lame? But she still gets in and out of the coop without a problem, and on and on and on. And it's just, it's quite phenomenal, in my opinion. This chicken's ability to move, let alone my dog's ability, you know, to do so. And even as Angus was growing up as a puppy, every once in a while, somehow he would strain or stress one of his legs, either his hip or his leg, mm-hmm. or his shoulder or his leg, mm-hmm. and he would limp for maybe a week to 10 days, and then it would go away.
Yeah.
Now, ever since he's been, say, four years of age, he hasn't had that problem. And, mm-hmm. of course, what I'm thinking is that, of course, that's what he did. As he's growing up, he's still growing into his body, and, you know, he went a little too far, just like we do as humans.
Yeah.
But he strengthened himself through that process, not that he did it on purpose, per se. And I haven't seen him limp once in the last two and a half years. So I look at that, I'm going, okay, so what's the metaphor there? What's the lesson that the universe is trying to teach? And to me, that has always been so important. You have horses in your life.
Yeah.
But you've had other animals who have come in and out of your life. And in our case, for example, the hawk that flew over the day we dispatched my dog. And so there was a message there. Can you share with us, and again, I'm sure there are many stories, but maybe the most profound of those stories where you had an odd animal that just kind of showed up in your world for a short time and then went on its way, as to say, hey, you know, whatever the message was that you might have picked up on that kind of helped you on your way.
Yeah. Well, like you, they're usually, I do sense that they come with a message. I feel very connected to, you know, animals that do come in and out, you know, quite quickly. One interesting one this year, last year, was our aim was to buy the land and the stables where we keep the horses. So, because we want to put it into a trust for, you know, to ensure that their future their home is there for the future, and the next generation of animals has its, you know, its own place. So it was a big thing for us to get to that place where, you know, we could buy it. And the day we did, the day that it all went through, a dove landed on the yard, and I just sat and watched it, and I thought, wow, you know, and it stayed with us for the day, and then I never saw it since. And for me, that was the message that this harmony is coming, and our dreams and ideas are coming to fruition, and we will, you know, achieve those goals. But the birds tend to be, when I'm working with clients that come, when somebody maybe is letting go of trauma, or they may be letting go of an emotion, or it may be just they're just letting go full stop of the burdens that they've carried in life. We work outside, but I have a shelter, and the horses will come and work how they work. But what I have noticed is when there is something quite profound going on energetically, we get bird, like flocks of birds, and they come in and fly really low, and they will land and they'll move in and around the horses when people are letting go of certain aspects of their lives. And it'll be always interesting which birds come in to the space. But it's the it's how low they'll come and fly. So they always sort of bring and add and enhance the work that the horses are doing and that the natural environment are doing when they are working with a person. And I just find that quite phenomenal that, you know, sometimes as an individual we feel, oh gosh, you know, not worthy, and we just feel like we're wasting people's time, or, you know, but in nature, every single thing, every life is so important. And, you know, it's sort of ceremonial in a way that every other creature that is well and fit and, you know, can serve in that moment seems to move in. And, you know, people's experience can be so, I don't know, impressed upon the whole of them when they see that nature in its beautiful colours and life will be there for them in that moment when they're ready to let go of something, to show them that there is something quite beautiful waiting. Mm. So, birds are quite a big one that seem to come in and out. We've just had a bird come a while ago, I don't know, a few months back, and this one's staying. So some stay and some go. But they do have, and even small, I mean, even flies, that sounds really strange, I know, but, you know, they can sometimes just land, you know, on me when I'm doing something, and I can just feel again that sense of connectedness with something so tiny, you know, and it will usually give me some kind of message. Usually I've got to come back into this present moment, and usually then things that are happening in my day fall into place, as opposed to me rushing round to try and achieve 100 jobs, mm-hmm. you know. So even from the smallest, tiniest thing that comes in to the largest thing, there's always quite a profound message. And I think that those are the moments when they say to us, just stop, be aware, observe, and your whole perspective changes, your thought processes change, and you go on and make the most out of your day in a more joyous and harmonious way.
Mm. We're talking with a very special guest today, and I say that because of the work that she's doing with the horses there in the UK, Helen Brennan. And it's extraordinary. We have people here in the Santa Barbara area, here in California, in different places that are doing the same kind of a similar kind of equine work, where they use the horses in a process where they bring in children and adults who mm-hmm. have maybe a learning difficulty, disabilities, if you will. Maybe they're autistic, you know, they have Down syndrome and those types mm-hmm. of things. And the incredible transformation that takes place mm-hmm. when they're sitting atop this mm-hmm. I'm going to say it again, majestic yeah. creature. I don't know what it is about them but I'm assuming that a lot of people who come to you and come to your mm-hmm. place, your shelter, probably kind of mm-hmm. get that same awe-inspired sense that there's something, maybe even, because I love the word you used, ceremony. There's something mm-hmm. royal.
Yes,
know,
yeah,
about,
definitely.
About these wonderful creatures, you know? Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. just amazing. It really mm-hmm. is. I really am excited about the fact that you have, of course, the website, which is belief444.com. People can go to find out more, not only about the book and the work that you're doing, but about you, and maybe even get in touch with you. And
yeah.
We encourage people to do just that. Helen Brennan, I'm very grateful for the amount of time that you have given us here on the program, and I hope that one day, if either A, you should make the trip across the pond and come visit Santa Barbara, we'd love to have you in studio. I know you couldn't bring your horses with you, but, you know, that's okay. Or B, on our sojourn to our final living place of Ireland, we would stop into the UK and visit and maybe even do another interview as well, although Skype works just fine too.
That'd be great. We would love to see you.
Love to reconnect in that regard. And also, I do have three final questions for you before we let you go, but I do want to let our listeners know once again, the book is called Belief. My guest is Helen Brennand, and the website again is belief444.com, 444, that's belief444.com. We encourage you to go to that website. Also, a reminder, too, that if you're listening to the radio broadcast, you better listen to the podcast, because the podcast goes beyond the 50 minutes that we originally do for the radio program. Also, if you'd like to support this program, we are gratefully appreciative of that. We have a PayPal account that you can contribute to, and I have to tell you how grateful I am for those who have supported this program financially. It goes a long way to help to defer the costs that I pay to keep this program going. And I will never, ever come to you and say, hey, if I don't get your support, then I'm going to have to pull the program. No. If I can't afford to continue the program with or without support, financial support, then that's what I'll do. But right now, it's going great. I'm having a great time. Things are looking up, and get very excited about everybody who has contributed. But a reminder, we are not 501c3. We are not nonprofit. Okay? So you cannot deduct the contributions from your taxes. So hopefully that's not a consideration. We'll take energetic healing support as well, too. Send us some Reiki. We'll use it to continue this program and keep things going. Helen, the first of three questions that I have for you, and again, my thanks to you for giving us so much time. The question is, who is Helen Brennand?
Oh, gosh, that's a hard one. She's now a very happy and very grateful woman who is honoured to be working with these, like you say, majestic, stunning creatures, and being able to share that wisdom with other people.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
I hope to achieve that this blessing that I experienced is shared by all, and that everyone sees that our animal kingdom is so precious, and we should do everything we can in our power to support them and maintain, you know, that their dignity and give them the respect that they deserve.
And what is your life's purpose?
To love unconditionally.
Well, Helen, again, I thank you so much, and also my best to your daughter as well. Beautiful work that she has added to the work of the book Belief, and again, we would love to have you back on the program in the not-too-distant future to continue the conversation. As you say, there are many stories of your experiences, as well as the experiences of people who have come to your shelter as well, and we'd love to talk more about that as well.
Oh, that'd be great. Thank you so much for having me on the show, Richard. It's been great talking
to you.
You are
very welcome. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.